You're listening to Practical Defense with Alex Haddix.
Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix, and this is episode 205, Experience Feeds Training with Daniel Shaw, Part 2. In this episode, we finish our discussion with Staff Sergeant Daniel Shaw, a firearms trainer with the U.S. Marine Corps and fellow podcaster on the Gun Rights Radio Network. We pick up right where we left off in episode 203, so there's no introduction or transition. The focus of the discussion is on the most important aspects of training that he believes helps keep him and his soldiers alive in combat. Although the discussion is focused mostly on firearms, the principles can be applied to empty-handed conflict as well. Proper, practical, and directly applicable training is universal. Also, you know, the practical defense tip and comment line that I just set up is hot. Thanks to everyone who called in and left messages. There's been a lot of good feedback and a few topic requests. It really adds a new dimension when I can hear a voice instead of just reading an email. Very cool stuff. I'll play a few at the end of this show. Also, if you would like to leave a voicemail, the number is 805-203-6586. Okay, we'll be right back with part two of our discussion with Daniel Shaw.
The legal aftermath of using a gun in self-defense can be traumatic and expensive. Get help and peace of mind through the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Network members receive much-needed financial and legal support right after a self-defense incident. They also receive education in the form of DVDs from some of the top names in the business, along with having access to a nationwide pool of attorneys. Learn about membership at www.armedcitizensnetwork.org.
Okay, Alex, I got one more thing on the mental aspect before we move on. It's something I talk about in Gunfighter Cast a little bit, and I present it to Marines too. I think it's the most important question that we could ask ourselves. You know, if you're listening to this show because you carry a knife for self-defense, or you carry a gun as your tool for self-defense, or if you're an active-duty military member who deploys into combat zones, you got to ask yourself the most important questions. You know, it's if I'm faced with this bad guy who's threatening my life or the lives around me, you know, can I pull the trigger on him? Can I take a human life? And as sacred as human life is, you know, I truly believe there's certain times whenever, you know, lives need to be taken. You've got to kill a bad guy. You've got to stop them, whether it's offensive military action or if it's someone coming into your house just determined to, you know, rape, kill you, and, you know, take everything. It's that these situations happen. And if you're carrying a firearm or a knife for defense, if that's your tool, then you've got to ask yourself, you know, can I actually use this? Because whenever you're staring down a barrel or you've got that person coming at you with a knife, that's not the time to say, you know what, I don't know if I can pull the trigger. You got to do that beforehand. And as many things as you can do beforehand, it's going to be a lot better than having to react to a situation and then think about those things at the same time.
That's an excellent point. I touched upon that several times in the past year. And I also brought up Mass's recommendation of going hunting, because what people don't understand is the movies make it look easy to shoot another human, and it's not. And people really don't get that. And you know, one of the big things is, well, if the guy's coming to hurt me or he's hurting somebody else, then it's, you know, cut and dry, and it's easy to do because, or they think it's easy to do because there's an obvious direct threat. And one of the big things that Mass likes to talk about is the fact that the hardest time to shoot is when you don't want to, but have to. And that's why he recommends hunting, because you don't have to go hunting. But do you have the will and the internal fortitude in order to do that? Now, I know the Marines are legendary in their training in terms of conditioning. And I also recommend the book by Dave Grossman called On Killing. It's an incredible read. So how has the Marines helped condition you? And how do you help condition other soldiers to break through that wall?
Well, I don't really think we do anything like that. You know, there's people joke around about taking people off death row and saving taxpayer dollars and, you know, having them run across the range, and we get practice moving targets and shooting the people at the same time. That's more of a joke. I guess for some people it's less of a joke than others. It's more serious, but it's never going to happen. But, you know, we really don't do anything for that. You know, we talk about, we don't show anybody any blood and gore or anything or anything crazy like that, trying to brainwash them into mindless killers. Contrary to popular belief, we do not teach Marines how to kill someone with their thumb when they get out of recruit training. It's just, there's a lot of ridiculous stuff like that that we hear about. And there's other countries that, you know, actually still believe to this day that we have to kill a member of our family to become a Marine. It's just silly stuff like that. But yeah, we don't do anything like that. You know, you might have some instructors and some topics or some classes that I teach, you know, I'll talk about, you know, killing like it's a thing you want to do, like it's a fun thing. But then there's other classes where I don't do that at all. You know, it kind of depends on the scenario and actually, and more importantly, the audience. Because I want these people, like for me, I have a hate for our enemy. You know, the people that will send their, you know, 7-year-old kid with a bomb strapped to him. You know, I've seen them do some horrible things. I've talked to these people. I've talked to the ones who IED'd us and killed people in our convoy. You know, friends. When they were being interrogated and stuff, I've heard them. I have a deep-seated hate for these people. These young Marines coming in here, they don't have that. I don't want them to be as bitter as me, but I want them to be able to pull the trigger to stop someone from hurting them. And to also, you know, we have to be, everything's not defensive in the Marine Corps or Army. You know, we have to go offensive. We got bad guys that, you know, they haven't shot at us yet, but they're presenting a weapon to us and they're getting ready to, you know, we got to hit them. We don't really do anything to, other than what we talked about a minute ago. It's like, you know, you got to react. You're going to have to fight. You're going to be scared. You know, it's, you can't let those Marines before us down. You can't let those Marines to your left and right down. And, that's kind of what we push. But I think one of the most important things that we got to think about is, Mass brought it up when he was on Gunfighter Cast, but it was Jeff Cooper who said it. He said, you know, you're going to find, you see, basically that person that's in the restaurant or, you know, wherever you are, someone's going to come in with a gun and maybe start shooting up the place. And you're going to think that you can't die just because you're you. You know, just, I'm me, I can't die. Well, you're about to figure out that you're going to die. You can die, and it's getting ready to happen. So, but what Jeff Cooper said to do, instead of thinking like that, is, you know what? I thought this might happen. I've already strategically chosen my seat. I have my pistol on my side. I planned for this. I never wanted it to happen, but I thought about that it could happen because I gamed this in my head, and now I know what to do. You know, that's what we want to have happen in any self-defense scenario. You know, you walk past a corner that's leading to a dark alley. You know, it's somebody may jump out from this corner and try to grab me and snatch me into this alley. Just by thinking about that beforehand, you know, you're going to be able to react faster. You're not going to be as surprised. If you talk about the Cooper's color code, you're not going to go straight to black. You're going to already be in that state of awareness. It's you got to think about these things ahead. And as many things as you can prepare for and think about ahead of times, the better off you're going to be.
And that is outstanding advice. Yeah, it's mental prep is, and I've heard it's as much as 90% of winning and surviving.
Well, we call it having a 90% plan. You know, your plan that you make is not going to work. It's not going to be solid. It's not going to, you know, get, but you can plan, you can get what's called a 90% plan. And, you know, a lot of it's going to, you know, go to crap, but you've at least got a plan and you're going in with an idea. Things are going to change. You got to be flexible, but, you know, just like you, you know, you're a big fighter. I think you do some BJJ a little bit. Is that right?
Yeah, a little bit.
And, you know, you see this opportunity for a triangle. You throw the triangle. Oh, he throws a counter for the triangle. Well, you already know what to do. You're going for a Kimura. You know, it's you know, depends on, you know, what he's got going on, or it's you have all these options and you're thinking ahead, and you know, you're preparing yourself before you actually even make your move.
You know, one of the things I like to say is that if you're thinking, you're moving too slowly. From based on your experience, is that accurate?
You know, yes and no. I think you need to engage your mind before you engage your weapon, but you don't need to overthink things either, and you need to already have that 90% plan. So if there is thinking involved, it's very, very minimal. if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I mean by that is it's not random reaction, but it's the state of motion, mind, no mind, and that you're moving and reacting on a subconscious level based on training and experience rather than saying, oh, wait, he's going to throw this punch now. I need to block it. By the time you think that, you've already got a fist in your face.
Right. Yep. Oh, yeah. You know, I would agree with that. It's and I've said that too, you know, the motion, you know, just without thinking, I'm going to react. There's a gun pointing at me, or I see a gun coming out of a holster or out of a waistband area. You know, I don't think that, you know, I've never had the situation happen to me in the civilian environment in the U.S., but, you know, based on the way I train and what I do, I can guarantee you if I see a weapon coming out of a waistband from, you know, a thug or something in front of me, I'm not even going to consider any other alternative other than clear clothing, draw a weapon, put sights on target, pull a trigger until a bad guy falls down. There's nothing else that's going to go to my mind. Now, if I have bad guys or innocents behind this person, you know, while I'm doing that, I'm probably going to drop to a kneeling position so the trajectory of my bullet's not going to hit some good guy in the background. It's those are things that I've already thought about ahead of time, so I don't have to say, oh, I can't shoot because there's bad guys. I don't have any other alternative. You always have options. You know, there's different things you could do. And thinking about it ahead of time, again, that's going to win your fight. So you don't have to think when it's time to fight.
So to kind of bring everything together, from a civilian defensive position, what are like the top five training recommendations to help bring realism and real-world scenarios to their training?
You know, I'd say the number one thing that people should do, and a lot of people disagree with me on this, I think shooting static on a static range at a static target, there's a lot of good things you can do there. But I also believe that someone needs to exercise. You need to get your heart rate up. You need to get some cardio. You need to come out of the holster, put sights on the target with your heart beating out of your chest, with breathing heavy. You're not going to be under the full stress. Preferably, you're going to be shooting at steel with friends around that are going to laugh at you when you miss the steel. That increases the stress a little bit. So getting cardio, get your heart rate up, keep breathing heavy. You're running to your firing point or you're firing and moving, and you're coming out of the holster and you're shooting at a steel target that everybody's going to laugh at you if you miss it. So you have a little bit of, I guess, if you fail, then you know, you've got a little bit of loss there. You're not going to lose your life, but maybe you have to turn in your man card when you're done. I don't know. But it's there's little things like that will increase the stress on the range. And I think you need to introduce your body to that. You need to introduce your mind to that when you're on that range. I know people who are just awesome shots. And, you know, I'd run them through like a little stress course. And, you know, they're on Marine Corps shooting teams, but they come out to one of my ranges where I've got some cones set up and I've got some different shapes on targets and I'm making them do some exercises and sprint a little bit before they come out there and they're wearing all their gear and they run through my range and they're missing everything. And they're at the end, they're like, man, that was fun, but that was hard, you know? And it really changes things whenever you have a little bit of that cocktail going through your body. And I think that's one of the most important things people need to do is go out there and train with as much of that feeling as they can get on that safe range. So that that even worse feeling when they're facing that death critical incident, whatever you want to call it, it's going to be a lot worse then. And they at least be a little bit prepared for it.
I think just having you stand behind me and look at me when I'm shooting, just the embarrassment alone of my poor accuracy would probably get that going for me.
You know, that makes a huge difference. Shooting a paper target and nobody knows what you're hitting or not, you'll see some guys out there running a gun, just wearing it out and missing half their shots. But we're looking at them, they look cool. They look like they're doing it right. But you look at the target and they're all over the place. But if you got a 10-inch steel target down there, everybody a county over knows you when you just missed. They heard that gunshot, but they didn't hear a ding afterwards. But, yep, somebody else missed a target. You know, it's pretty obvious. And it's also more fun. So get some steel, get a little exercise before you shoot. That's just one thing. You said you wanted five?
Whatever's appropriate.
You know, I could probably do five. That's it if you're talking about shooting. But I also agree with Masada Yuba on this one too, 100%. He talks about the thing you do the most often, and that you bought that gun to protect your family, to protect yourself. And whether you're a new gun owner or you're an old guy who's had guns forever, don't get complacent. You know, and if you don't know what you're doing, ask somebody and learn, because you're going to be loading and unloading and clearing and cleaning that weapon around your family that you bought that gun to protect. So I talk about being awesome at things like reloading. Well, you need to be awesome at safety. You need to know that weapon inside and out so you don't ever compromise the safety of your family or yourself. So I'll go with that one for number two.
That's which definitely a big one.
Could probably be number one, but yeah. You know, that's the thing about it. You know, prioritizing things is pretty tough. I mean, there's just so many important things. Like I said, you know, defense and marksmanship, it's a lot of small things that come together. There's a lot of, without one of them, if you lose, you know, one thing in the tetrahedron or whatever, you know, it doesn't work. It's, you got to have everything. It's a lot of small things. You know, you got to know your gun. You know, if firearms your tool, then you got to know your gun. You got to know it inside and out. You got to know whenever something happens to it, a stoppage, it doesn't fire. You get that click, loudest sound on the battlefield. You got to know what to do to get that thing back in the fight. You got to be able to look at it and instantly know the action to take. That what we talked about a minute ago, motion. What? Oh, I see that my bolt is to the, or my slide is to the rear from using a pistol a little bit, and I have a round sitting on the feed ramp, and it hasn't quite went to the chamber yet. What do I do? You shouldn't have to think about, how do I fix this? You should have already done it a bazillion times, and it just happened. You know, right away, oh, slide lock, magazine's empty. You immediately reload. You know where your magazine is. It's in your pocket, or it's in that magazine pouch inside your waistband, or however you're carrying. It's just happening. As soon as you identify that problem, you're already working on the solution, you know, right away. So knowing that firearm inside and out, how you can problem solve it if something happens is important. But I'd also say, don't only know your firearm, but know other firearms. Maybe you find yourself in a mall where you can't carry your firearm because of the stupid sign on the door that says no concealed weapons. But now all of a sudden some bad guy comes in there and decides to shoot up the place. Well, people are doing that nowadays, and we got to shoot them to make them stop shooting folks. And you might have a security guard laying on the ground, and he's carrying a Beretta, and the only thing you know is Glocks. Well, the Beretta might be a little bit if the only thing you've ever seen was a Glock, that selector or that decocker on the side and that safety is going to, you know, blow you through it for a loop. So you might not really understand it. So know a few different types of guns. You know as many as you can, at least a working knowledge of them. I think that's important because you might need that, what we call a battlefield pickup. Never know. You know, like I talked to Marines about presenting to the target.
Yeah.
If you're back to talking about, you know, you're faced with an assailant, shoot him. He's probably already got a gun out. He may have it at the clerk's head in the gas station. He may have it pointing at you saying, give me your wallet. You may be planning on not coming out with a wallet, but coming out with a firearm. Well, that better not be the only time that day that you practice drawing from your holster. You should have done at least 10 or 15 draws before you walked out your door. You know, unload. I tell everybody that. You're going to carry a weapon. You're going to go on patrol as a police officer. You know, how many times did you draw your weapon today? Today may be the day that you're staring down the barrel of a pistol, and you got to get that weapon out of the holster. Maybe you have a level 2 or level 3 retention system on that holster. How many times have you disengaged that retention today? You know, you're scared. You got adrenaline going, and you think you're going to be slick and fast out of that holster? Probably not. You know, unload your weapon. Let your wife check it. Draw from your holster a few times before you walk out the door. You know, check it yourself if nobody's around. Do it safely, but come out of the holster. You know, do it a few times. Knock the rust off every day before you walk out of the holster. That's just something that I got into back when I was in the free world and I could carry a pistol. Now that I'm in Japan, I can't, but I got less than a year left here, and I'll be back to where I can, you know, protect myself again. But that's a habit that I got into, was before I left the house, I would just take the time to, you know, practice with whatever clothing I had on, drawing out of my inside the waistband holster, or if I was carrying outside the waistband.
Okay. Why don't we finish with something that Rob Pink has called training scars, things that are bad habits, things that we should avoid when we practice so as not to hurt ourselves in a conflict.
Yeah, you know, I see training scars all the time. I believe there's a such thing as being too safe. I think when we're on a range shooting or we're doing a certain type of training, whether it's, you know, hand-to-hand, whether we're doing throws or you're doing something with a knife or something with a pistol or something, I think if you're too safe, there's a balance you have to find. And I actually wrote an article about this a little bit. And maybe I can find it and send you a link to it in case you want to put it in the show notes, in case anybody ever wants to read it, anything I write. There's a balance there where you want to conduct this training because there's a certain gain from that training, but then there's a certain risk with that training. Now, if you negate all the risk, that training is not going to be worth as much because you're doing something to create training scars. You're going to do something that you wouldn't normally do in a fight because you're trying to make it safer. But then if you don't do it at all, you know, you're not getting the training at all. So you got to find a balance there. You know, and if it's something that the risk outweighs the gain, don't do it. If you have to compromise the drill or the scenario so much that it's no longer game-like or fight-like, then I say don't do it because you're going to get the training scars. Most people have heard of most gun people have heard law enforcement and military back in the day when they were carrying 38 special revolvers. And they were they would go to the pistol range and they would shoot and they would dump the brass in their hand and then they'd put it in their pocket, grab their moon clip, throw it in there, put their rounds back in the cylinder, closed cylinder, and finish their drill for the reload drill. Now, everybody on the range ended up with a pocket full of brass, and there was no brass on the ground, so they didn't have the police call. They didn't have to pick up their brass at the end of the day. It was a great idea. Everybody thought it was great. That's what we were doing. Well, it turns out Marines were dead in trenches with their revolvers in their hands and a pocket full of brass. And I think the same has been said for police officers. By doing something wrong, just to game the game or to make it easier on the range or something or look better, that can come back and bite you. And there's been cases in history where that small little thing where they're dumping the brass in their hand, put it in their pocket, has came back and bit people.
I've heard stories also about soldiers over in the Middle East doing their thing, and they were getting shot because they were bending over out of cover to pick up magazines rather than just letting them drop and walking away from them.
I've read an article about that, and we're probably talking about the same one that was on a forum from a certain Marine who got shot, and he blamed his training.
No, actually, I heard this from my cousin who served over there.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that, but also the Marines that were with me, I trained them as well before we went over there. And I always tell people, you know, we don't have an endless supply system. So if you have a speed reload, your bolt locks to the rear, primary objective, get your weapon back in the fight. Do not even attempt to secure a magazine. Don't try to grab it. Don't pull it out and put it in your pocket. Don't do anything with it. Let that thing fall. Put a new magazine in. Keep fighting. If you have a chance before you leave that position and there's no risk whatsoever, you know, never die for a magazine. By all means, if it's right there and we just killed the bad guys and it's completely clear, pick your mag up, throw them in your drop pouch, throw them in your pocket, whatever you got to do. Because we don't have an endless supply of these things. We didn't have freaking food in OF1. If everybody would have left their magazines, we'd have been screwed. So we have to have at least a little bit of magazine retention. But I always tell them, it's like, never die for a magazine. But, you know, if it's the fight's over, if we have a chance, it's behind cover, you're behind cover, go ahead. If there's, grab that magazine. Now, if we were in the zombie apocalypse, then I would say, yeah, go ahead and risk your life for that magazine because you're not going to get any more of them ever. But, you know, in most military cases nowadays, you can leave that magazine behind. No big deal. Go get it. But yeah, in recruit training, they really push that. But then when they get out to the fleet, Marine Force, they should have someone, you know, a corporal, a sergeant, staff sergeant like myself saying, look, we can replace a magazine. We can't replace a Marine. I don't care if you come back without your magazines. I want you to come back alive. If you got your magazines, great. But yeah, it shouldn't be happening. But yeah, I can see it happen in some cases from undertrained Marines.
Okay, one of the things I like to do when I teach martial arts is after you've taken somebody down to the ground, don't help them up. Just walk away, because the last thing I'm going to do is drop some dude and then put out your hand to help him up.
Yeah.
Your goal should be escape. For me, when I teach, the technique ends after you've run away. It's not drop the guy and then you stand up and walk to the end of the line. Is you get up and you turn around and you get some distance, and then you go to the end of the line. Because technique ends with escape. It's a self-defense technique. It's not anything else.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
But the thing is, you know, a lot of people think it's rude. Oh, well, you just, you know, you're not helping your buddy up. It's like, no, I'm helping him and helping me. I'm helping him by getting more exercise, by getting off his lazy butt and getting off the ground. and I'm helping me by not introducing a training scar.
Exactly. And I have a similar training scar. You're talking about a training scar where after a takedown, the person instinctively puts out their hand to help them up, you know, which can happen in your scenario. A scenario that we get into a lot is I'll be on a range teaching some Marines, and I will see them. We do standard response to a threat is two shots to the chest. Then we'll assess and maybe hit another point, maybe even the pelvic girdle area or a headshot, or maybe just continue to shoot them in the chest until they, you know, stop being a threat. But most of our drills consist of two shots to the chest. A lot of times, and then we do a search and assess where we're searching for another target and we're assessing our down target. And people get into these routines where they just pull the trigger twice, bang, bang, put it on safe right away because they've always been taught to be super duper safe. You know, to always have it on safe unless you're shooting. But if I just engaged a bad guy coming through a doorway and I'm assessing the area and I'm holding on my doorway and I'm looking for more bad guys and I should not have my weapon on safe. I should have it on fire. I just engaged an enemy there. That's the enemy's most likely avenue of approach through that doorway. And I just shot his buddy. Another guy's probably coming right behind him. I shouldn't be putting it back on safe. But these guys have been trained so much to be super safe on a range. You'll see him going, pop, pop. And then go straight on safe as soon as that last round exits the barrel. They're putting their weapon on safe, and they're doing a quick little jerk left and a jerk right with their barrel, pretending like they're searching and assessing because the instructor makes it looks like to the instructor that they're actually searching and assessing. So I have to pull them in, tell them, slow down. Like, look, put two shots on the target. You search, you assess, and then you reluctantly put it on safe. If you're using a pistol and it's time to reholster, you reluctantly holster your weapon. You don't want to put it away. You're making sure that it is absolutely time to put that weapon away or to put it on safe. And if it's not, you keep it out.
Excellent advice. Well, Daniel, I think that covers everything. Really appreciate your time coming on the show and sharing your experiences with us. I think that there's a lot of good stuff in here that people can really learn from.
Well, thanks for having me, Alex. I had a good time in here talking to you. I hope I didn't ramble or sound less, energetic as I usually do because it's 2 a.m. in the morning. But definitely worth staying up with you. I can't wait to hear the show.
We started 7 a.m. California time, and it was midnight Okinawa time. A little bit of a time difference there.
Well, it's all right. I've got 5 hours before I got to be at work, so it's okay.
Oh, geez. Well, I definitely appreciate you sacrificing for us to share your knowledge and experience.
And anything for the listeners who are trying to, you know, prepare themselves better, you know, to defend themselves. We all the podcasters of the Gun Rights Radio Network make tons of sacrifices. You know, it's that's why we do it. You know, and I'll stay up all night if I got to. I'm too lazy to do my own show here lately, so I'll be on yours.
You haven't done a show since the tsunami, and the post-tsunami episodes were really good, very good insight, and I highly recommend people. At the time, I mentioned on my show that people should check it out, and again, go back, because a lot of people that are interested in self-defense are interested in, you know, bug-out bags and things like that, and you had some wonderful, wonderful insight from direct experience right after the fact.
Yeah, I actually had to bug out a couple of weeks ago, too. We had a big earthquake, and the tsunami was going to hit right here on my side of the island where my building is. And we grabbed our bags and went up north. It ended up not generating tsunami, but you know, we activated our little plan, and it worked out pretty well. We got out of there pretty quick. But yeah, I did do a show since then, and it was our post-Mag 40 show with the Gun Dudes. It's up there.
Oh, that's right. That's why I discounted it, because it had the Gun Dudes on it.
Well, if you listen to Gunfighter Cast and you're listening to this right here, I'm sorry. I've got something recorded. I've got to add to it a little bit, doing an IDPA show. So don't get too mad at me. As soon as I got back from Mag 40, I got sent to the Philippines. And I got back from the Philippines, and I had a week of work to get caught up. And then I came down with malaria or typhoid. So then I was pretty close to dying. And then I recovered from that, and here I am. Sorry. don't hurt me.
I just might, because there have been a couple of times where I had shows planning in my mind and you stole them from me.
You know what? Everybody does that to me in the network. Every time I think I have a good idea, there's too many podcasters in the Gun Rights Radio Network now. Every time I get a good idea, I listen to somebody else's show and I'm like, man, I can't do that now.
Yeah. And the problem is everyone's really good, so the ideas are good. And they, the first time I was going to have Mass on my show to talk about something, and then right when I was about ready to send Mass an email and set it up, you had him on the show talking about the same damn thing. And then I was going to try and set something up with the gun dudes to talk about IDPA and competition. And that's your next show. So,
yep.
Dude, you ruined
it. Sorry. I'm reading your mind. I'm still in your ideas. I've hacked your computer. You type it up, I get it.
So, but anyway, so Daniel is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network. I forgot to mention that at the top of the show. And his show was called Gunfighter Cast. And it is really good stuff. I highly recommend everyone check it out.
Yep, I would love for you guys to come download. And I just added a blog to my website. So I write things every once in a while. And go check that out if you like.
Are Marines allowed to do that? You know, write?
Yeah, you know, some of us can. And some of us have even been to college. Ooh. At least a little bit.
All right, dude. Well, thanks again for coming on. It's been fantastic.
Thank you for paying for my college. No, it was great, Alex. We've been trying to do this for, I think, 2 years now. And yeah. It was cool to finally talk to you. I never actually talked to you in person. And it's good to, I guess, virtually meet you.
Yeah, well, we traded lots of emails, just never actual voice.
Yep. All right, well, you take care. And everybody out there, thanks for listening. And I guess keep training.
You got it, man. Thanks.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back. Thanks again to Daniel for coming on the show. I highly recommend his podcast, and I listen to it as well. The show is called Gunfighter Cast, and you can find him on iTunes or over on gunfightercast.com. Now, here are a few of the first voicemails that came into the Practical Defense tip and comment line.
Hey, Alex, this is Jeff from Maryland. Been listening to your show ever from the beginning, I guess. One comment I do have, like everything, but from the sound quality, is your S's are too piercing. I don't know if there's some kind of foam cover you could put on your microphone or whatever, but man, I've listened to it on a podcast and I always have to turn you down because it's a ice pick in my ear, so maybe you can work on that, but everything else, you sound great. You may hear from California. Have a good day.
Hey, that's People's Republic of California to you, Ferners. I changed my rig up somewhat to see if I could cut the piercing S's some. I hope it helps, Jeff.
Hello, Mr. Haddix. My name is Braden Lynch. And I just had the pleasure of listening to Practical Defense 204, Keep Your Cool. And you commented at the beginning to see if you could solicit any comments about the background noise, music, sound quality. And I just want to give you a big thumbs up, very professional, excellent, great quality. The sound quality is commensurate with your fantastic insights. I have the pleasure also of purchasing your book in Kindle format. And found it very interesting and educational. So just want to give you a gigantic thumbs up and kudos for such excellent work, and I look forward to future publications and podcasts on your part. And also the story you told of Keep Your Calm was very sobering, unfortunately. I hope it all works out for the best, but appreciate all the insights you've done with it. And then one final tiny little request, just a thought, if it's good for you. I didn't really see this exactly in the book, but I did send you an email to this effect, too, as a possible idea, was the idea of protecting large plate glass windows and bays of glass that could be penetrated pretty easily. You talk about glass shattering protection and such, and shrubbery and things like that. I've got a situation where it's off of a porch. I'm just wondering how I can more fortify the situation. I've got it well lit, but, you know, short of putting in bulletproof glass, I don't know what else can be done, really. It's one of those dilemmas, a weak point, basically. Anyway, keep up the great work. Hey, thank you so much. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
I had to edit that clip a bit to remove some personal information, but thanks for the call, Braden. For large plate glass windows, I totally understand the problem. The home I grew up in, the one that was burned down, had 3 floor-to-ceiling plate glass windows.
Essentially, one wall of the living room was nothing but glass. Although really pretty, it was a huge vulnerability. There are no preventative measures I can suggest, just kind of ways of reacting to when the window is broken. You're right. Short of installing bulletproof glass or laminating the existing glass, there's not much you can do. If there are listeners out there with other ideas, call or write in and share your thoughts. Also, thanks for buying my book. You know, surprisingly, the Kindle edition of my book is outselling all other editions 5-1. The Nook sales have been abysmal. Hundreds of books have been sold, but 11, yes, only 11 have been sold on the Nook. Over half the sales have been on the Kindle alone. The paperback sales are about a third of the Kindle sales, which I found really surprising. I know where I'm going to focus my attention on future books.
Hey, Alex. My name is Michael Ashton. I just discovered your podcast and really enjoy it. I'm a geek professionally and have an interest in this topic as well. A couple of things I wanted to tell you about. First, you can set up a free handheld smartphone app. It's set up for another blog I like, teamripped.com. Told him about that, but at conduit.com you can go through and build your own for free, which does the iPhone, Android, Windows Phone app, whatever. It'll take in your feeds from Facebook, Twitter, RSS feeds, whatever. So you might want to look into that. No, I don't make money on it. Just thought I'd let you know because that may be yet another service you offer. By the way, I've been listening to your show. Your voice, I love. Sounds like you could be on NPR if you wanted to do that. I'm trying to catch up. I've listened to about 50, but it takes a lot of time to hear them as I don't commute. One other quick bit on CBS. On the news, saw that cell phones are being stolen in Minneapolis out of people's hands. Might be another tip. People are, you know, failing to be aware. Thanks. Take care. Thanks for your good work. Bye.
Thanks for calling in, Michael. I'll look into the app development you mentioned, although I already do have some apps on the iPhone and Android. They sell for $1.99. I think I make 70 cents on each, and to be honest, they haven't sold well at all. Combined, I think fewer than 10 have ever been purchased, and that's across both platforms. That's not even enough for the vendor to send me a check. When you can download and play the podcast for free, the prospect of streaming the show through an app really isn't all that compelling. And thanks for the tip on the phone snatching. Your only real protection against that type of theft is awareness, which can be hard for people when they're focused on their conversation or whatever else they're doing on their phone.
Hey, I have a question or maybe a suggestion for an episode. I was wondering if you could discuss pre-assault indicators and what to look for and maybe something on the victim interview process. That would make it for an interesting episode, in my opinion. This is Salvatore Collada from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for calling in, Salvatore. The Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network has a fantastic hour-long DVD on pre-assault indicators. It comes as part of your membership education package when you join. I'll also add the subject to my list of topics to cover in future episodes. And speaking of the future, I've already recorded an interview with Doc Wesson on the subject of Kevlar vests. Doc is a PhD chemist who works on designing the material and developing various protective applications for both civilians and the military. We have a great discussion on how and why it works. I also have more interviews planned with Marty Hayes of the Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network and his wife, Gila Hayes. Now, Gila authored one of the premier books on firearms for women, and they'll both be on the show in the coming months. And of course, you'll continue to get the normal stuff that falls out of my brain, with my apologies in advance. But that will do it for this week. As always, you can follow my daily tips on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I'm Practical Def, and Facebook is Practical Defense. I also invite you to check out my book on practical home security. It's currently available in DeadTree, commonly known as paperback, Kindle, Nook, and iTunes editions. Autographed copies are available on my website. The URL is alexhaddix.com/book. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. You can also leave us a voicemail on the new Practical Defense tip and comment line at 805-203-6586. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Hey, everybody, we are
Lady Antebellum.
Before every show, we practice. Gotta be prepared.
Exactly. And the American Red Cross wants us to be prepared, too. Prepared for disaster. This
world. Just take 3 steps to be Red Cross ready. Create a disaster supplies kit with water, food, and a first aid kit. Make a family communication plan and listen to local radio and TV reports to stay informed.
It's that simple. To learn more, visit redcross.org or contact your local Red Cross chapter today. Thank you so much.
Practical Defense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense podcast. For questions, commentary, tips, or topic suggestions, send us an email at podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 805-203-6586. I look forward to hearing from you.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.
You can now hear Gun Rights Radio Network while you're on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. On-demand news, talk, and more on your mobile phone. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, and no memory or storage wasted. Available for your iPhone, Android phones, or your BlackBerry. Downloading is easy. Go to Stitcher.com or check out your app store. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under Sources.